He was the head of the group of the North, and he needed Usher because Usher represents light, because he represents darkness. The stripe of Dan represents darkness. Where does he get such a... What does it mean, that description of the tribe of Dan, that he represents darkness because the North is the darker side in the Northern Hemisphere? So, besides, when the Ramban talks about the relationship between Reuven and Shimon in the first group, he says, Reuven is the positive force. That's why he's the head of the group. Shimon is flawed. He has to receive the power of Reuven. So, if you apply this idea to the fourth group, so why would Dan be the head of the fourth group? It should be Asher. But if he says that Asher is the positive force, is the force of light, because olives used to come from Asher, and olives represent oil, and oil represents light, and Dan represents darkness, so he's the flawed one. So why was he the head? So in order to understand what the Ramban means, that once you'll hear the idea, you'll see that that's for sure that what the Ramban means there. Let's go to Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov is giving the blessing to the children. And when it comes to the tribe of Dan, he has three psukim. And it says like this, Don Yodinamo, which means there will be a day when the tribe of Dan will be the most powerful, the tribe that will direct the Jewish people, judge the Jewish people. Ke'achad Shiftei Israel. It will unite the Jewish people. That's, in other words, there will be a day that the tribe of Dan will be extremely powerful and it will unite the Jewish people. Here, the power to unite the Jewish people. Then it goes on. Yehi Don Nochosh Aleiderev. You have a tremendous blessing. You should be like a serpent. Now, the serpent is not a positive symbol in Judaism, usually, right? Right? Nochosh, you should be like a serpent. What's so special about a serpent? Ah, great. The serpent is able to bite the heel of the horse to throw off the rider backwards. You hear? Hanosheich ikvesus, right? When you want to get the rider to jump backwards, right? You bite the heel of the horse of the rider, right? And then that causes the horse to jump, and that causes the rider to jump. So what does that mean, this blessing? Says Rashi, when did it ever happen? Did it ever come true, the blessing of Yaakov? Yes, says Rashi, by Shimshon. By Shimshon HaGibor. Shimshon HaGibor was from the tribe of Don, and he represents the Broch of Yaakov. Number one, he directed the Jewish people. He was the Shofet, Don Yodin Amo. Ke'achad Shiftei Israel, and he actually united Klal Israel. Right. And what does it mean that he bites the heel of the horse in order to throw off the rider? That also came true in the life of Shimshon, that the success of Shimshon against the Philistines was the greatest when he didn't fight the Philistines directly, but when he destroyed the pillars of the building, and that killed the Philistines. The indirect nature of his victory is hinted in the indirect nature of how the Nochosh gets the rider to jump backwards. What? But again, what's really happening here in Shevet Don? And the most important part is the third pasuk, that Yaakov says, Lishuoscho kivisi Hashem. In the rest of it, there is nothing, no parallel to this statement in any other of the one of the blessings. The Yeshua, Hashem will bring the Yeshua. What does that mean? So says Rashi, why? Because what he really, Yaakov is sensing here intuitively, is the failure of Shimshon. He didn't actually make it. Make it to what? What was the goal? Where was Shimshon supposed to take us, really? So, I heard the Yisod, the the principle of what I'm going to tell you, I heard it from Rabbi Bullman. He said like this, you know, that the whole history of the Jewish people is a repetition of trying to bring the redemption, right? We are almost there, we fail. Almost there, we fail. Almost there, we fail, until eventually we'll make it. That's what it is, right? By Har Sinai, almost made it, right? Kriyas Yam, almost made it. When the Jews sent the miraculum, they almost made it. There were constantly situations that we almost made it. One of those situations is the period of Shimshon. Shimshon, by the way, is called Shimshon. Why? Because the word Shimshon is related to the word Shemesh. Right? And the Shemesh is the sun. And why is the sun called Shemesh? Because the sun is a Shamash. It's a servant par excellence. It's the most reliable servant. It's the symbol of the best servant. Gives everything. Constant. Asks for nothing. Gives you energy, light, heat. Everything. The sun gives you everything. He's the constant servant. Right? Shimshon is that servant of God who wants to make everybody serve God. That's his purpose. His purpose is to unite the Jewish people in the service of God, to make everybody shamashim, servants of God. Shamashim, small sons, in other words, servants of God. That's what he wants. His purpose is to bring the Mashiach. But there are different methods in bringing the Mashiach. For instance, Moshe Rabbeinu was also supposed to be the Mashiach. He was supposed to bring the redemption. It says in the Gemara that Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to bring the Jews into Eretz Israel. They would have settled, and that would have been the final redemption. Which means Moshe Rabbeinu, through his greatness, would theoretically been able to raise everybody up, right, to the point of redemption. But there is another method of the true redemption. The reverse method of redemption. What is that reverse method of redemption? So first of all, redemption is not only, Geulah is not only a Jewish experience, it's a universal experience. The whole world goes through the process of Geulah. Through the Jews, of course, but it's the whole world, right? So there is a method that instead of raising the top, Moshe Rabbeinu and everybody following, there is another method which can be understood with the following analogy. You can raise something from the ground by grabbing the top and pulling it up, or you can get yourself, your hands dirty, get into the dirt and pick up from the bottom, and in that way you can redeem the package. Okay, that's the second method. Through that method, then you have to infiltrate evil, you have to infiltrate the dirt, and through that change the tumor to such a degree that it will raise everybody else. When you raise the bottom, then the top will automatically be raised, instead of doing it the Moshe Rabbeinu's way, to pull from the top so everybody can follow. You put your hand down in the dirt and you pick everybody up from the bottom. Now, with this concept of redemption, we can understand clearly what the Pasuk means. When the Pasuk says, and Shimshon went to the Philistines to marry this Philistine girl, and the parents were very upset. They didn't know that it was God who wanted it to happen. God wanted it to happen that the Shofet Israel, the Jewish judge, should marry the Gentile girl. So, sure, she would have converted, whatever she would have, but how can you, why should that be God's will? And then there is another amazing story. There is a story that has no meaning on the surface. Shimshon, on the way to the Philistines, meets a dangerous lion, tears him apart, and when he comes back, he finds there honey, right? So he's all overcome with that. He found honey where the lion was. So he comes to the Philistines and asks them a riddle. Me az yatsamato, from the dangerous az, from the strong one, sweet things will come out. What does it mean? And the Philistines have to find out what it means, and they can't. And he's all upset, and they are upset. What's going on? What? They know the riddle. They don't know the riddle. And what does the Tanakh mean by telling me over the whole story? What is that all about? So, says Rabbi Bullman, the whole symbolism of honey is very important. The Gemara says that there are only two things that should be not kosher, because they derive from something not kosher. The rule is anything not kosher will beget things that are not kosher. For instance, if you have eggs from fish, eggs are eggs, right? Wrong. If it's eggs from a fish that's not kosher, it can be kosher. Kol hayotze min hatome, tome. If it comes from something not kosher, it's not kosher, except for honey. What's honey? Honey is derived from a bee, right? It comes out of the bee. The bee is not kosher. Honey, the Torah permits. What's the idea of it? That sometimes, through being involved in something not kosher, right, something kosher can come out. That's the process of the redemption, through dealing with the non-kosher, with the Philistines. Remember, the Philistines represent, at that point, the Gentile world. There is always, in every generation, a certain nation that represents all nations. You know, that particular nation is the one that deals with the Jews, and they represent the rest of the world. Sometimes it's called Egypt, sometimes it's called Persia, sometimes it's called Greece, sometimes it's called Spain. I mean, it depends, but it's always one nation that represents all others. And the idea was to infiltrate the tumor, to infiltrate the impurity, by pushing the impurity upwards, right? You would redeem the world. You know, if the Philistines would become better, then the Jews would automatically become better and they would be redeemed. In other words, redeem the Jews by changing the Philistines. Shimshon constantly tries to infiltrate the Philistines. And what does he try to get him to realize? That you can get honey, right, from the lion which represents the Philistines, the wild, attacking, dangerous lion. Honey can come out of it. If the Philistines would have recognized that the dangerous killer lion can produce honey, that recognition symbolically would represent the recognition that they can change. Instead of being wild, attacking, dangerous, murderous lions, they can be honey producers, even though they are tomei now, but they can produce dvash, they can produce honey, because that's the symbolism of honey. In other words, what Shimshon is trying to get is the geulo, the redemption of the world. How? By getting your hands dirty, infiltrating the tumor, changing the tumor, and automatically the Jews who are above it will also change. Now, that's what it means. We ask, Don is given a blessing that he can be like a serpent. A serpent is a negative symbol in Judaism, of course, but that's the whole strength of Dan. The strength of Dan is that he can infiltrate the serpent. Serpent represents evil, darkness. Here, darkness. You infiltrate darkness, you infiltrate the evil, and when you change that, then you change the world. That is the purpose of Dan. Okay, so that's the idea behind it, which means the strength of Dan is that they can deal with the dirt, except that if you deal with dirt and you are not 100% successful, right, you can come out at the end without the package and dirty. The danger of Dan. This is why nobody was so vulnerable to idol worship, right, like the tribe of Dan. But that vulnerability is just the other side of the coin of that tremendous strength, that they have the strength to get into the dirt and bring out of it. And it's interesting, the Gemara says, the Jews were traveling southward. In the beginning, they were traveling southward, right, and then they were north. So who was the last one? The tribe of Dan. Me'aseif lechol ha'machanos. they would gather everything that would fall along the way. So on the surface, it seems, well, somebody lost a handkerchief, they would pick it up. Of course, that's not what it means. It means if anybody was weak, the tribe of Dan, who had the capacity to deal with weakness, would strengthen them. That's the strength of the tribe of Dan. They can deal with evil. They can deal with darkness. They can raise it out of the darkness. Okay, that is the characteristic of Dan. So this is what it means that they can... How do you get the rider to stop? Right? So you can push the rider to stop, right? But that's not the method of Dan. Dan's method is the indirect method. He works through the heel of the horse. Meaning, what is the purpose of Geulah? That the Jews should reach the top? He doesn't work that way. He works through the bottom. He works through the Plishtim. If he infiltrates the Plishtim, if he marries into the Plishtim family, he becomes like one of them and he changes them from inside, that's how the Jews will stop in their ways. That's the symbolism of biting the heel that shakes the horse, that makes him jump, and the right, and he'll affect the rider. Meaning, it's the indirect method of redemption. That is the power of Shimshon, and that's the power of Dan. Now, Shimshon never made it. He wasn't successful. Right? That's why Yaakov says, Lishuosho kibisi Hashem. But, had he been successful, the Yeshua would have come from Shimshon. That's the interpretation, right? Lishuosho kibisi Hashem, because Shimshon failed. This is what the Ramban means. When the Ramban means that Dan represents darkness, he doesn't mean to criticize Shevet Dan. He means exactly what we were saying up to now. That darkness is the symbol of Dan, because he deals with darkness. He's the serpent. He deals with the powers of evil, which is represented by darkness, and he knows how to deal with it. Of course, therefore he's so vulnerable. This is why there was an Avodah Zarah in Dan. This is why the Pesel Micho was in Dan. What else do you want from somebody who deals in dirt and gets the treasures out of the dirt? Sometimes he gets his hands dirty. That's the shade of Dan. This is what the Ramban means, and this is why the Dan is the head of the tribe. He's the powerful force. He's the positive force. But he's a force that can work through darkness, through the Nochot. Fine. Sometimes there is a price that they pay, but it's a tremendous strength of the tribe of Dan. It's not a flaw in the tribe of Dan at all. This is pshat in the Ramban.
Why is it that he was traveling on the north? Exactly. Is there any significance about that?
That Ramban says, because the north is the dark side. That Ramban says, why the north? Because Tzofon is the dark side. Because in the southern hemisphere, the north represents the dark side always, right? The sun, there is never a sun in the north. The sun is always either in the southeast or in the south. It rises in the southeast and it sets in the southwest, says the Ramban. In the north, there is never a sun. Therefore, Tzofon is the symbol of darkness. That's where Dan belongs, says the Ramban, right? That on the surface seems a terrible thing to say about one of the holy tribes of Jacob. What does it mean? Just the opposite. He means it as the strength of Dan. He knows how to deal in the darkness. We'll go on in chapter 3. Ve'ele toldos Aharon Moshe. Beyond the Diber Hashem es Moshe Garzina. Now, this parsha starts in chapter Gimel Posuk Aleph, and it ends in Posuk Daleth. It has altogether 4 psukim. So let's pay attention. Listen to the first posuk. The following are the descendants of Aaron and Moshe in the day that God spoke to Moshe in Har Sinai. The second portion of this verse is unnecessary. What do you mean, on that day the descendants of Aaron were such and such? Why do we have to stress that day when God spoke to Moshe by Har Sinai? Second posuk. Ve'ele shmos bnei Aaron, and these are the descendants of Aaron. Nodav Avihu Elozer v'Somer. Ele shmos bnei Aaron, who are the Nodav Avihu, they died. So who remained? Elozer v'Somer. End of parsha. What's missing? Moshe's children. Moshe's children. Says Rashi. Ve'eino maskir elo bnei Aaron. If the introduction is these are the children of Aaron and Moshe, where are the children of Moshe? Elo ve'nikur tolos Moshe lefi shed lindon toiro, because Moshe taught them Torah. Melame, this teaches us shekola melame this ben chaveru Torah. If somebody teaches Torah to somebody else's child, it's as if he gave birth to him. That's very nice, but one big problem. Moshe taught Torah to OJ. Moshe's Rabbeinu. So, why do we say that the children of Aaron are his, everybody's his children? If you want to say that, if that's the idea, you want to bring out, so he taught Torah to everybody. Says the Gur Aryeh, the purist on the Chumash, that's the Maral Gur Aryeh, and he says, well, he says, he must have taught specially the children of Aaron. That's fuck me, he says it, but so what? What does it mean, specially? So they are more of his children than others. What does it mean? Says the Netziv, the Naftali Tzvido Berlin, and the Amek Dovor, it says like, the difference is the following. It says in the Gemara that Moshe Rabbeinu be'arvos Moyov, which means in the mountains of Moyov, right before the Jews came into Eretz Israel, Hoil Moshe was able to interpret leva'er, to interpret the Torah. What does it mean to interpret the Torah? Leva'er, right? Says the Gemara, he taught them the Mido Sheha Torah Nidreshes Bohem. He taught them the methodology of Torah. Which means, from Sinai until 40 years later, there was no need for methodology of Torah. It's true, there was no need. Why? Because you need the methodology of Torah only when you can't find out from the source. You have doubts. You don't know what to do, so you need the methodology of Torah to tell you what to do in this and this case. But during, as long as Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, was there a need for the methodology of Torah? What happened whenever the Jews had a doubt? Right? The daughters of Tzlokot, we don't know what to do with them. So what do? Did we sit down in this Midrash and start thinking this way or that way? No, we didn't do it. How do we do it? We went straight to the source. We went to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, wait a second. And we came up with an answer. Right? I mean, that's like, the idea is that the Sinai experience lasted until Moshe Rabbeinu died. Meaning, the radio was still open, so to speak. Meaning, you didn't have to come up with your own answers. The source was still there. That is why whenever there is a question in the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu says, let's see what God tells me. He doesn't sit down and figure it out. From the day Moshe Rabbeinu dies, you're not allowed to do that anymore. You can't come to a prophet and say, I don't know what the halacha is, you tell me, ask God. You're not allowed to do it. You have to sit down yourself and work it out according to the methodology of Torah. But that was only given to the Jews at the end of the 40 years, says the Amek Dovor. But to the children of Aaron, he taught the Mido Shatoro Nidreshes Bohem from the beginning. Okay? Fine. So according to the Amek Dovor, he adds on the Gur Aryeh that the special part of the teaching of Moshe Rabbeinu to the sons of Aaron is the methodology of Torah. It's not the pure information of Torah. What remains to be understood is, fine, so there is a difference. So why is it, if you teach the Torah information, they are not your children? But if you teach the methodology of Torah, they are your children. How does it make sense? You understand what I'm asking? Which means, there is a difference. But why is that difference sufficient to say that if you teach the sons of Aaron the methodology of Torah, then you can call them your children? What is the meaning of they are your children, but if you teach Torah facts, they are not your children? What's the idea behind it? So, I mean, no one doesn't say, he just says this difference. So, let me tell you something that will clarify beyond a doubt what the Amek Dovor means. I'm going to read you now from a Rambam in Hilchos Ishus, Halochet Tesvot. It says like this. everybody is obligated to have children, it says. It's a period of reading. It's a mitzvah in the Torah to have children. It says like this. But mi shechoshko nafshoi betorah. But if the translation is a little bit difficult, choshko nafsho is a tremendous intensity of desire. The word cheshek, a tremendous intensity of desire. Mi shechoshko nafsho betorah tomi. But he has such a degree of attachment to Torah. Kebenazai, like a certain person in the Gemara called Benazai, a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva, we see right away what Rama means. The Dovakbo means there's such an attachment between himself and the Torah that he can break away from Torah. The Loi Noso Isha in Biyodoyoboy, he has no sin. Right? But that's all if he has no Yerurim, he doesn't have. If he has bad thoughts, even that. But if he's able to completely concentrate in Torah, he doesn't have to get married. Now, the Gemara in Yevamos, which is the source for the Rambam, is absolutely amazing. Listen to this dialogue between Benazai and somebody else. The Gemara in Yevamos, Samar Gimel. Benazai Oimer. Benazai says, anybody who doesn't get married, Benazai, here, that's the Benazai the Rama mentioned that he didn't get married because he was so attached to Torah. Listen to this Gemara. Benazai was talking how important it is to be married and have children. Because if you don't, then it's terrible, whatever it is. Omru Loi, so the rabbis tell him, you are a Nore Doirish. You speak very nicely. Ve eino Nore Mekayim, but you're a hypocrite. You don't fulfill what you speak about. Yeah, he never got married. And he's saying how important it is to have children. Omar Lohem Ben Azai. So Ben Azai answers that. Umaese shenavshi choshko betoro. Efshal le'oilom shiskayim alede acherim. I am attached to Torah. Let some other people have children. So, on the surface, he didn't answer the accusation. The accusation is like this. You are not allowed to be a hypocrite. If you are a thief, even for the best reason in the world, don't get up there and speak about honesty, how important honesty is. Not because honesty is not important, because you have no right to talk. Right? That's because if you are a dishonest person talks about honesty, it's hypocrisy. So how can you be Noe Doiresh and Noe Mekayim? You don't fulfill your own words? You're a hypocrite? So what's Benazai's answer? If his answer would have been, "What? I can't help it." So you mean you're a hypocrite but you can't help it? It doesn't make sense. Obviously Benazai's answer is, "I am not a hypocrite." How can it be that in his answer lies that he's not a hypocrite? Only one way. That the experience that Benazai is having is tantamount, is equal to having children. How does it mean? Well, how can it be that Choshko Nafshe Betorah is a parallel experience of having children? How could there be such a thing? Well, very easy. The idea is the following. The world has two sides to it. There is a physical world and there is a spiritual world. Okay? In the physical world, the world has to continue. Sure, it has to continue. So children is a necessity. What about the Torah world? That doesn't have to continue. So if I come up with new chidushim, new ideas in Torah, chidushay Torah, I'm not producing children. I'm also producing children. I'm producing children of a different type. What about physical children? So other people can do the job of having physical children. I am involved in having spiritual children. So why isn't that a substitute? So am I a hypocrite? So now it makes sense. Benazai is saying that he is not a hypocrite because he's being Mekayim having children. How? Through Chidushei Torah. Now, this idea of Chidushei Torah is only possible
through the methodology of Torah, not through the information getting of Torah. Do you hear this? Which means like this. If Torah would be taught only as information, the whole experience of being attached to Torah and thinking in Torah all the time wouldn't be possible. It's information, you apply it, and that's all. The whole idea of being involved in Torah is because there is a methodology in Torah, not because it's dry facts. Okay? So the whole idea of Benazai being Dov Konafshe B'Torah, Chosh Konafshe B'Torah, that's only because the methodology of learning exists. Therefore, he can find a substitute for having children. Okay? So therefore, the Rambam, when the Rambam actually says that someone who is in the Madrega of Ben Azai doesn't have to get married, and it brings it in the Hilchos Piri of Erivio, in the law, that is a substitute for Piri of Erivio. You can have Torah children. Right? In other words, if you teach the methodology to other people, they'll be able to use that methodology and use it for other people. So you created the chain of the future of Torah, which is the parallel to having children. Okay, now we can understand. Now let's go back to the Amek Dovor. When the Amek Dovor says that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu was considered the father of the children of Aaron, but he's not considered the father of the Jewish people, he's only considered the Rebbe of the Jewish people. Why is that? Simple. Because up to now, he's only teaching the Jewish people dry information. He's not telling them what's behind the halachas. He's not teaching them the methodology of Torah. So at that point, he can only be a Rebbe, not a father. Right? Because it's Torah that can't have a future. You follow that dry Torah without the methodology has no future? So therefore, there is no fatherhood in it. There is no reproduction. There is no future in it. The future of Torah is only in the methodology of Torah. It's only the methodology of Torah, when it meets Torah, can reproduce. You follow this idea? Therefore, it's only the children of Aaron that the Amek Dovor says that he taught them the Midosh HaTorah Nidreshes Bohem. He taught them the Midosh HaTorah Nidreshes Bohem. So therefore, he's their father because he gave them the reproductive part of Torah. Now, according to what the Rambam says in Ben Azai and what the Gemara says in Ben Azai, it clarifies 100% what the Amek Dovor says. The difference between the way he taught the children of Aaron and the rest of the Jews is exactly in this, that all the rest of the Jews, it was information that he gave them. That's all. The children of Aaron, he gave them the tools of reproducing Torah, of creating new Torah. It's true. At the end of his days, Moshe Rabbeinu becomes all our fathers because he taught us all the method. But during this period in Sinai, right, he was only the father of the children of Aaron. To the rest of the Jews, he was the teacher, not the father. Now we can understand why the Torah, when it tells you the story, it stresses what? The Eile Toldos Aaron u'Moshe Beyond the Ber Hashem is Moshe Behar Sinai, which means in Har Sinai, that's when the split was. Moshe Rabbeinu taught the rest of the Jew information, and he taught the children of Aaron Behar Sinai the methodology of Torah. So that's why he was only the father of the children of Aaron. But of course, at the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's day, when he taught the methodology of Torah to all the Jews, he became the father of all the Jews. But that's the stress. Up to now, it's the methodology of Torah that makes them the father of the children of Aaron. So that clarifies exactly what the Amek Dovor means. And it's very possible, I was thinking, the source of the Rambam is Ben Azai, right? What is the source that Ben Azai did? So usually fine, I'm sure he had a source. But what was the source that Ben Azai had that he could say such a thing, that there is such a thing as substituting the real thing, having children, for the subject to have children? Where did he get it? This is where he got it. It's straight. The Torah is telling you, Aloche. The Torah is telling you that Moshe Rabbeinu was Mekayim. Having children is just not a nice expression. It's like his children. Those are his children. He's Mekayim Piri of Erivio. That's why Ben Azai said, I'm not a hypocrite. I was also Mekayim Piri of Erivio. Okay? This is the sword that Ben Azai had for what he did.
So you're right. So you're right. So the point is that most of his life he was Rabbeinu, right? So therefore the main relationship that we had with him is as Rabbeinu. It's true.
Also, what about his son? We don't have him in the regard of his own son.
So the point is, and that of course requires another shear, the relationship between Moshe and his own sons. The relationship with Moshe and his own sons is characterized by a gap. Nothing of Moshe is transferred to his sons. It's as if the sons skipped Moshe. They are Levites because they come from the tribe of Levi. None of the characteristics of Moshe. Moshe was a king. You know that Moshe was a king? Vayi Bishur Melech, says the Gemara. Moshe was a king. What's called a king? A man who controls a nation. He's called a king. He was king. Vayi Bishur Melech, he was king. King usually is transferred to the next generation. Nothing. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kohen Gadol. Where was he a Kohen Gadol? In the Yemei Miluim, in the eight days that the temple was established, he was the Kohen Gadol. Kehuna of Dovlo, Kehuna is transferred to the children. He didn't transfer to the children. He was the teacher. Nothing of his was transferred to the children. What happened? There was a gap. There was a gap that's expressed in the story of not being able to circumcise his son. Remember the story, he comes to the desert and he can't circumcise his son. Something, and he can't. And there is a gap there. And it's interesting that, remember the Maramban mentions the competition to the sheep, to the Mishkan that was created in Israel, the tribe of Dan, Petzel Micho. Who was the priest of that culture, cult? The grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. The grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Gemara mentions that there was something, I mean, it's something in Moshe Rabbeinu that his children didn't get it. Meaning, it skipped that, like a Moshe Rabbeinu was outside of his genes. So this is why it's Moshe Rabbeinu who is not able to transfer what he is to the children. He can only transfer it to his disciples, not to his children. That is the nature of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's also, it is a lot to do with it. Benoto ben Aviu had no children. What does it mean that they had no children? Remember, we once spoke about it. There are apparently, on the surface, are so many reasons why Noto ben Aviu died. Remember that they drank wine and they came into the Beis Hamikdash. The Torah says they brought in a foreign fire, right? They had no children. It seems like different reasons. We spoke about it. It's all one. What's the reason why they had no children? Benazai, they had such a tremendous desire to attach themselves to God. The problem by them was that they weren't ready for that closeness. And if you go to a point of closeness to God that you haven't prepared yourself, you die. Remember the Jews by Har Sinai? They said, we can't take it anymore. And if you are not at the level that you can take the intensity of the experience, you just cease to exist. The problem with the sons of Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, is that they had such a tremendous desire to become close to God, that their desire to become close to God went beyond their capacity to become close to God. That's why they had to die. And that's the Eish Zoro. Eish is only a symbolism of intensity. Zoro means foreign, something that was not within them. It wasn't within their power, which means not of their view. It's all one thing. Drinking wine, why would you drink wine? You drink wine because you can't get yourself to be at a certain level, so you artificially push yourself, right? That's the drink. That's why it's not of you drank wine to reach that level, right? It's all the same thing. They brought a foreign fire. They had no children because they decided that their intensity so much that it can suffer. No, their intensity wasn't enough. Meaning, they reached beyond what they were capable of reaching. It's all wine, okay?
Does one there have anything to do with the Torah?
Where?
By what you mentioned in this passage?
By them, Eloi Boni means physically they had no Boni, but they had it. The reason why they chose is because their intensity in their relationship to God, for them, was the substitute. And the Torah says it wasn't a substitute.
But they thought, right, they justified themselves. Why they never got married? Because they are married to God, they said. They don't need any children. Right? That's their justification, which the Torah says was wrong. They weren't at the level. Okay? Now, concerning this pasuk, take a look in pasuk Dalet. Vayomos noto vavyu lichnei Hashem, and they died. Ubonim lo yhoyu lohem, and they have no children. Now, it's interesting that it should be mentioned here on the surface, because to tell you why the children aren't mentioned, because they had no children. Vayichahem, therefore, who were the Kohanim? Eleozor v'tomor al pnei Aron avihem. What does this four last words mean? In front of Aaron, they were the Kohanim. What does it come to imply, in front of Aaron? Meaning, while Aaron was around, they were the Kohanim. So as if to say what? And after Aaron, what? Well, let's take it to it means that in front of Aaron, Eleazar and Itamar were the Kohanim. But nothing pronounced after Aaron. Notov Aviv came back and they also became Kohanim. Doesn't it sound like that? It says in the Zohar that Nodav Aviv, the Gilgul, I mean, I was in their reincarnation, went into Pinchas. Because what? Why Pinchas? Think about it. Pinchas had the intensity of commitment to God, right? But instead of its being out of control, he rectified it. He controlled that intensity and only did it al pi halacha. He was a kanoi. He was a zealot. Right? Which is, it's also like an ish, like an intensity that nobody else had. But he had controlled it. So therefore he rectified the sin of Nadav Aviyu. So it says, he was the Gilgul of the Nishomos of Nadav Aviyu. You shouldn't be surprised of two Nishomos in one. It's no problem at all. I mean, there is no problem in Nishomos of two Nishomos in one body. So Nadav Aviyu became Pinchas, it says. So in one of the Mephoshim, I think it was the I can't remember exactly, it could be that it's the Shelo, that he says, Al Pnei Aaron Aviyem, in front of Aaron, you know, while Aaron was alive, Eleazar v'Itamar were Kohanim. After Aaron died, it's true, it's after Aaron died, Pinchas, right, becomes a Kohen, and he is Nadav Aviyu. He is the Gilgul of Nadav Aviyu. He took that intensity of Nadav Aviyu and used it in the right way, by killing the head of the tribe of Shimon, if you remember, right? But he did it exactly the right time, didn't overdo it, right? He did it, meaning, he had intensity and control. Nadav Aviyu had the intensity, but he had no control. It went beyond the control, H. Zoro. This is why Pinchas is the rectification of Nadav Aviyu, and that's why he's their Gilgal, right? Because it says, all Neshomos that need rectification, it says in the Zohar, have to come down to get it. Since Pinchas is the rectification of the Nadav Aviyu, then he's their Gilgal. He's their Gilgal Neshomos. So this is what the Posuk is hinting here. The Posuk is hinting here that after the death of Aaron, that's what it happens, that Maaseh with Pinchas, after the death of Aaron, this is why it says here, in front, when Aaron was alive, it was the laws of Rishomor, implication. But after Aaron's death, Nadav Aviyu came back in the form of Pinchas. Okay, now, I won't be here tomorrow and next week, but somebody else will give the shiur at 5:30.